Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. I just got back from a little family vacation and oh my God, can I just say something really quick?
Absolutely.
Because I'm doing something right now that I've not realized is something that I do until I started editing back these podcasts and I need to figure out how to stop.
Oh boy.
Is I talk like this when I'm trying to put together a sentence and I sound so stupid. Like, I'm Girl, so scared about what's about to come out of my mouth. I'm like thinking five words ahead.
I've never noticed that. I don't think it's noticeable to anybody but you.
Until now.
I think you're good.
Okay.
Until now.
No, but yeah, I got back from vacation. It was super fun. It's like the movie recap that I'm covering today, I put together a week and a half ago now. And so it took a second for me to get back into the mindset, but I'm back. I'm here and I'm excited to get back into horror, which it has not been on my mind, thankfully, at all. Over on my family vacation, it was very horror free.
You know, that's probably a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, it's good to have a break.
It is, because let's see, what have I done in horror lately? Not much. Mm. Oh my God, that's a lie. I watched Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey last night.
You forgot. You already and forgot that happened.
You know what? Because it's like actually the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. I can't believe it's real. It has a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes. And honestly, that's a little high. I'm going to be so honest with you right now.
I was going to say on Letterboxd, why aren't we able to do 0 stars?
That's a great question.
You have to do a half. And sometimes there's a movie where it's like the half is too much.
That's too much. I didn't even realize like you couldn't do a 0. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Come on, Letterboxd.
Come on. I think the only, obviously I didn't have any horror while I was on vacation, but the week before I started the Fears to Fathom horror games.
Oh my gosh.
I am 3 episodes in. I have 2 left that I'm going to be finishing this week and next week. It's been an interesting time because it's first person POV. A lot of indie horror games are first person and it always makes me nauseous. Like
it does?
Always.
I wasn't sure this one was going to do that.
I don't know what it is. I'm like such a baby to it. It's really weird. I think half of it has to be mental because once one game makes me really, really nauseous, I'm like, oh my God, is this one going to? Is this one going to? And I get in my head about it. I really like that first episode. Like it's definitely the most mundane out of all of them. I can
tell.
And
I love it. It's so good.
I love it. The being stuck home alone as a child is terrifying. I remember
Absolutely.
I got home from school in the daylight as like a 12-year-old and my mom wasn't there. And I was like calling everyone I knew, like, where is everybody?
Don't leave me here alone. Wait, what was episode 2 is the hitchhiking one. And which one is episode 3? Is it the lookout or is it the Carson house?
Carson house.
Okay, I love Carson house. That one's crazy.
If you're a horror game person, I would definitely recommend Fears to Fathom. Caitlin is the reason I am playing these games right now because she rides for them.
I was basically begging her to play them. I was like, they're so much fun. I haven't even played them, but I've watched people play them. And I just think like the stories are so just like the simplistic, terrifying nature of it. It's not zombies. It's not monsters. It's just like real life stuff, which I think makes it that much scarier.
Yeah. I was told that they're based off of like real submissions. I mean, you can never probably 100% verify. Although I wonder if at this point they are figuring out a way to do that because of just the integrity of the game. Mm-hmm. But like they're real life submissions from people who have lived through these things. And I'm
exactly.
like, that is what makes it scary.
Right.
But anyways, today's movie, you're going to be shocked when I say this, but the movie I'm going to talk about today is a festival film.
Festival films are the best.
We love a festival film. Okay, so it's called Watcher, and it premiered at Sundance on January 21st, 2022, and it worked its way up to a theatrical release in June of 2022. And I am bringing us back again into the psychological thriller subgenre of horror.
Yay, I love it. I love it here.
I also want to mention that I think one reason maybe that this movie, I think, didn't blow up as much as it could have is because that same year, the show The Watcher came out on Netflix.
Oh.
And it was like a really, it was a hit. Like a lot of people were talking about it, watching it. And it's based on like a true story of some people who move into this new house and then they're getting these letters and people are watching them. And it's very cult vibes. Like you have to take care of this house. It's been a while since I watched it, but I just remember that it was based off of true events, which is kind of, I think, why it blew up the way that it did.
Cool. I don't think I saw anything about that, but I'm also the most chronically offline online person that's ever existed. So.
Yes, yes. I would definitely recommend that show. I remember watching that when it came out and it was being hyped up. But this movie, I loved so much. It was like a hidden gem when I found it because it's one of those movies that was just so well done where I was like, how are more people not talking about this?
Yeah.
The main girl, Julia, is played by Maika Monroe. Hopefully I'm saying her name right. You never know.
You never know.
She is an established horror actress that you might know from It Follows. She plays Jamie from It Follows. And then most recently, she's the lead in Long Legs. She plays that main girly Lee.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. No, definitely know her from that.
Yeah. But she's got blonde hair here. Not that it really matters. But like, I didn't recognize her when I watched the movie and like connect her to Long Legs just literally because the hair is different. Like, I'm the worst with face blindness.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, that is her. So this movie was Chloe Okuno's feature film directorial debut, which makes this episode of ours the first movie recap where the movie's directed by a woman.
Hey, let's go. We love to hear it.
Chloe is very early on in her filmmaking career. Before Watcher, she's been involved in a couple short films, and most notably, she was the writer and director of one of the segments from the anthology film VHS 94, which is the fourth installment of that VHS okay. franchise.
I've only seen the first one, so...
I think me too, and I don't really I'm really bad with anthology films. Like, usually just one segment will stand out and stick with me. Like, I don't watch them very often. I don't know.
Yeah.
Her segment was called Storm Drain, so I am kind of curious now. I'm probably gonna check just that segment out.
Yeah.
Because I love her as a director in this movie. This is one of those movies that the critics love, and I don't understand how it did not blow up beyond that. Mm-hmm. With its $5 million budget, it pulled in $3.5 million at the box office.
What?
I know. I don't get it. I do believe it reached more people once it was taken in by Shudder, and it's actually like available right now on Netflix. So it's one of those movies that had a resurgence in stream numbers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, box office numbers, they do mean a lot, obviously, but it's like nowadays, I feel like it's not as much of a death sentence for a film to not do well at the box office because sometimes it just takes that streaming.
Yeah. I feel like that happened with Woman of the Hour with Anna Kendrick. It blew up on Netflix this year and I was like, oh, everyone was treating it like a new movie. And then you look and you find out it came out 2 years ago and it's like, now everyone's talking about it because it's on Netflix.
Right.
So with all of that being said, let's get into it. I'm really going into it without telling you anything.
Good. That's what I like.
Yeah. We're going to stick with that. Okay.
Cool.
So right away, we meet Julia and Francis. Julia is our main girlie. This is our main couple. They're arriving in Bucharest, Romania for the first time. Well, she is. He, I believe, has like family from here. I think he's been here before, so it's more like just a new city to her. He like speaks the language. She's just going with him because of a work opportunity for him.
Okay.
So their taxi driver drops them off at their new apartment building. On their way in, Julia looks up at one of the apartment buildings, just taking it in. It's lined with endless big windows in each unit. And in one of the windows, there's a man staring out at her.
Great way to start. Great way to start. I don't like that is one of my least favorite images in horror is like somebody just staring at you.
Yes, it's so ominous. I can spiral so hard just from that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not standing. It seems like he's sitting on a chair at the window because we can only see like some of his chest and face.
Mm.
But she only sees him for a second before Francis is calling her along to come inside where they're being greeted by their tenant. No, not tenant. Their tenants. What's that person called?
Landlord?
Thank you. Okay. They're being greeted by their landlord, Flavia.
Flavia.
Flavia. She's a nice woman that's probably in her 50s or so, very lively, but I would say not too over the top. Like, she's nice.
Okay.
Nothing weird. The only problem is that she is speaking mostly Romanian, which is fine because, like, that's where we are. That's right. Where, you know, everyone is going to be speaking that. And it's fine for the couple because, like I said, Francis is fluent, mm-hmm. but Julia doesn't and can't follow what is happening. And sure. It was the same situation with the taxi driver. It's just like setting up one of the many challenges that can come from living in a foreign city.
Absolutely.
But the apartment is beautiful. They're in unit 27 and it's got that European charm. The only thing is that some of their overhead lighting seems to be out of power, apparently due to a grid problem. But it comes fully furnished. There are a lot of lamps that she turns on for them and it's feeling pretty cozy.
Oh, okay.
So once they're settled, Flavia leaves and the couple have a bit of banter about how Julia smiles too much. And that's why Flavia thought she didn't like the apartment, because like there was this moment before when Flavia was like, you don't like it. But Julia just came off a certain way because there was a lot of Romanian talk happening mm-hmm. and she just didn't know what was being said. So
yeah, it's kind of awkward.
Like, exactly. She's just doing like the smile and nod situation.
Yep.
So Julia and Francis have a little laugh about that together and they make their way over to the couch to decompress after a long day of travel. And by decompress, I mean a full-on makeout session.
Love that for them.
Love that. Clothes are coming off. So we know that it's leading to more. And while they're doing that, there's this long shot panning out of their big apartment window, looking in while like some credits pop up on the screen. And eventually we end with like that title screen of Watcher.
That sounds creepy, but like cool, just as a shot.
It's a cool shot. And it like just sets the tone right away. Like they are on display right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's cool. Okay.
We cut to that night, both of them sleeping in bed, or at least Francis is sleeping. Julia seems to be having some trouble. And I just have to say that I'm obsessed with the lighting and the vibe that's happening in this scene. We have the yellow glow of the city streetlights pouring in through their window and it's raining. So like the shadows of the rain on the window pane are covering the walls.
Yes.
It's my
dream. I can like see this. Oh my gosh, I'm loving it. Yeah, take me to that place, please.
I love a rainy city. Since Julia's having trouble falling asleep, she decides to get up and walk over to the window. And their apartment building is right across the street from another apartment building. So she's peering into the windows that she can see over there. There's an old woman sitting on her couch watching some TV, one with some people walking around in their kitchen. And then her eyes land on a specific window that's up a little higher to her left. And it's just this man standing at his window, staring out, seemingly right at her.
Mm-hmm.
She can't get a clear image of him or know for sure that it's her that he's staring at because of the heavy rain. But it absolutely feels that way. It's creepy. What are you thinking, like, if you're her in this moment?
So here's the thing. Like, I want to judge this dude, right? Like, be like, oh, he's creepy, but she's kind of doing the same thing at the moment, so it's like I'm not that upset at him, but if he's just straight up staring her, it depends, dude. I don't know, it's definitely unsettling, but also I'm being a hypocrite at that point.
I feel you. I've also been here before where like I was staying in this hotel in New York and it's one of those buildings where it's up against another hotel or apartment mm-hmm. building, and I'm looking out the window and then there's other people that are doing the same thing. But like what happens when you're doing that is like if you both make eye contact, you kind of just oop and you just keep on moving your eyes. It's like I'm not being weird. But in this situation, it's just like he's already watching her, dead set watching her. And then he just stays watching. And that's what's like, okay, that's weird. But anyways. You know?
Like, I'm not going to panic at that point, but I am going to be uncomfortable, but I'm going to say, you know what? Maybe I should stop staring at people. That's probably going to be my.
Oh, 100%. I'd probably close those curtains and be like, okay, well, not going to do that anymore.
No more of that.
But anyways, then Francis mumbles from the bed and he's like, oh, you can't sleep. And they get cuddled back up together. And Francis has to be up early in the morning to get to work, which is, oh yeah, I mentioned that's why they're in Bucharest.
Mm-hmm.
And Julia asks him to wake her up before he leaves, which he agrees to. But then we have a hard cut to morning and daylight is streaming in through the windows and Julia is groggily waking up on her own. When she looks at her phone, she finds a text from Francis and he sent a picture of her dead asleep, mouth open, face smushed into the mattress.
Oh.
And he says, "I couldn't bear to wake you. You looked too peaceful." Which, like, absolutely not. I hate it. If my boyfriend sent me a picture like that, I'd be mortified. Like, how like, you perceive me is not my business.
Right. Don't even tell me. Also, like, I know this is just them, like, having a cute moment. But, like, after what happened last night, the thought of somebody taking a picture of me sleeping, that would, like, I don't know why. That would freak me out a little bit.
Right. No, that's actually a good point, too, is just, like, that subtext of being watched when you're unaware of it.
Absolutely.
But she finds it funny. She just, like, is a little bit embarrassed. She groans to herself, and then she just texts him back, "Creep, good luck today."
Love.
So, yeah, they're cute. So to get her morning started, she does some proper unpacking, and during, she's playing this interactive Romanian language learning podcast type of thing. She's dedicated to learning. Like, throughout the whole movie, she's constantly listening to this Romanian language, learn to speak the language type of podcast.
Yeah.
But then, through the bedroom wall on the other side is another unit, and she hears a loud thud and a woman scream.
Oh.
And it's one of those screams that isn't super obvious about whether it's playful or scary.
Okay.
So she pauses her podcast and just waits and listens for more. And there's a little bit of noise, but it almost sounds like a woman is laughing, and it is more playful now. So she just lets it slide.
Okay.
It's like, okay, whatever.
I would do the same.
Yeah. So we're probably hitting about late morning now, and Julia decides to walk down to a local cafe. She gets to test out some of her Romanian on the waiter when she orders the coffee, and she just walks around getting to know the city for the day, picks up some flowers. She's like, she doesn't have a job here, so she's just kind of on her own during these days that he's going to be out working. It's pretty mundane, but it's a nice day. And that evening when she makes it back to her apartment, she stops outside and looks up at that opposite building with the creepy window man.
Yeah.
And he's not there, but she's just kind of curious at this point, I think, probably second guessing if she even saw anything weird the previous night.
Like, can I ask a clarifying question?
Mm-hmm.
These are two different windows that she saw someone staring at her out of, or are they the same?
They're the same.
Oh, okay.
So when she was, like, looking up at the apartment building, it wasn't hers. She was looking at that opposite one.
Oh, okay, okay.
Then later in the evening, while it's dark out and Francis still isn't back from work, she's laying in bed and looking out her window at his, waiting to see if he's going to show up again.
Dude,
which I'm like,
close a freaking curtain and just go away.
She is doing it casually where it's like, okay, if he looks, I can just quickly pretend that I'm not, you know, doing anything.
Okay.
So, like, she's not being super, super annoyingly obvious and weird about it, but it's still, like, ugh, not what I would be doing. I just, try to forget about it and avoid.
I'm nervous. Although, I get it, though, because I guess at that point, if it happens a third time, now you know it's, like, super creepy. Whereas, like,
true.
The first two times, I'm like, okay, that's a little weird. But, like, if it keeps happening, I'm going to start to get concerned.
Yeah, so it's like you're watching just to make sure it's not going to happen again so
absolutely.
That you can feel better, yeah. So the next day, she does more city exploring. It's all people talking in Romanian around her. At one point, she accidentally walks into this beautiful building that is apparently off limits, and she gets yelled at by a security guard. Ooh. So, like, the movie is really making you feel her isolation as an American in this city.
Yeah. I probably would never go outside ever again if that happened to me.
Oh my God. That's like not being able to communicate is so hard. Like, I don't think I could travel alone. Well, it's like obviously she wouldn't have traveled here without him.
Right.
And he knows this place, but I would be so intimidated to like even be out in public in a world that like could possibly not understand me. Some people know English, but a lot don't. So
right.
It's like that night when she's walking down the hallway toward her apartment door, she notices that the door is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
She slows down and is obviously very hesitant in approaching, and we hear her echoey footsteps, and she walks closer and closer, and when we peer inside the apartment, we see the silhouette of a pretty large man just standing there.
Nah, we don't.
Staring out at us from the darkness inside, but then Flavia comes into frame in front of him and greets us very chipperly, saying, "Done, the lights are fixed," but, like, she's speaking Romanian.
Okay.
So I mean, I'm just assuming that that's what she just said, but she's speaking Romanian. So,
right.
So Julie is like, huh? And the man walks out and leaves, heading down the hallway without a word, with like this big worker's bag in his hand. So, like, context clues, but like, he just, yeah, not a word, I guess. So it's like, okay, thank you.
They didn't want to pay him. You speak a word in a film and you get paid a lot more. So
true. And Flavia starts trying to explain slower and more animatedly to Julia that the overhead lighting is fixed. And then she catches on and sighs out in relief when she realizes it was just the lights being fixed. And she says, thank you. So she walks in and flips the switch, turning on the lights. And while she was out that day, she ended up buying this little shiny clay figurine of Dracula, because why not? I don't know.
Yeah.
We cut to her sitting at the dining table with a glass of wine and her little Dracula. And there's another glass out and ready for Francis, but she keeps like tapping her phone to still see that there's no updates. And he's been at work like 90% of their time in Bucharest so far. Like, he's just always gone.
Yeah.
So once again, she finds herself drawn to the apartment window, and she turns off the overhead lighting so that she can see better and people can't see in as easily.
Okay. Okay.
And of course, you know, her eyes land on the creepy man window. Mm-hmm. And the creepy man is there.
No, I want him to go away.
He has sheer curtains drawn, but you can still pretty clearly see him sitting there looking out at us.
Oh, that's worse. The curtains make it worse.
Yeah, because like, it's like he doesn't want you to see him exactly. Like, he's trying to remain mysterious.
Yeah.
But then the overhead lighting in our apartment suddenly turns on and we hear Francis's voice, and he goes, "Hello, darling. Any particular reason you're standing in the dark?" And she says,
"Yeah."
And she tells him, "Just people watching." So, I mean, all right. Francis says that he's exhausted, but work was good. And he notices the little Dracula figurine, which she says she got for him, but she knows it's silly. And he acknowledges that it's very silly, but he loves it. And they're so cute. And then they decide to go on a little night stroll outside. They're catching up about their days. And even though they aren't seeing each other a lot right now, they do make the best of their time together. And like, we are rooting for them. We like this couple.
Okay, cool.
But while they're walking, there are some police sirens that start blaring. And down an alleyway, they see a group of people surrounded near this now parked cop car. And they try to ask one of the onlookers what's going on, but they just say they don't know, which like is so, it's like people just gravitate toward like anything. I don't know. It's such a weird thing.
Morbid curiosity.
Yes, that's exactly it. Morbid curiosity is so interesting to me, where it's like, first of all, is this respectful? Are you about to traumatize yourself? But like, people cannot help it. And I kind of understand.
Oh, listen, it's horrible, but like, I've done it myself. I'm not going to pretend that I haven't. So it's like, this is a whole side rant that I won't go on, but like, it's how I feel about true crime. Like, I don't love that true crime is a genre, but I have watched it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like this weird relationship that I had.
But yeah, so they tried to ask one of those onlookers like what's going on. They're like, oh, I don't know. So it looks like there's possibly a body loaded into the back of this ambulance, like under a tarp.
Oh.
And then there's a man looking deeply depressed with a blanket around him, sitting on the edge of the back of this ambulance. And responders are going in and out of this building doing who knows what. But Francis just pulls Julia along and they go back home.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, like, you don't want to have seen that.
Especially, that's like only a couple blocks away from them. Like, that's scary too.
Yeah.
So the next day, Julia is home alone again, sitting on the couch and flipping through the TV channels. And of course, she lands on the news, and we see the crime scene that they walked by the previous night. And the reporter says a woman was butchered in her flat.
Oh, no.
Crazy word to use, but like, I get it.
Oh, yeah, the word butchered is just, yikes.
It brings me back to Scream, right? I don't think it's the scary movie even, the parody. I think it's literally Scream, where it's like, how does it feel being almost brutally butchered? It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But there's more being said, but that's all that we, the audience, get a subtitle for.
Okay.
So, but just then, Francis walks in home from work and she asks him to come over and explain to her what's being said here. And he says that apparently she's been murdered and they're talking about when she was last seen. And then it cuts to that guy who is wrapped up in the blanket being interviewed. So, of course, Julia keeps asking Francis to translate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's becoming disturbed seeing this. And he just says, he found the body. But when Julia asks for more details, like how she was found and how exactly she was murdered, Francis just says they didn't say, which like upon a first watch, I was like, I think he's lying just because he doesn't want to freak her out. And he can tell she's like on edge about this.
Yeah.
So he switches up the conversation and he reminds Julia that his coworker Nikolai and his wife are coming over for dinner at 7. And Julia's half-heartedly engaging in the work dinner conversation, but it's clear that her head is stuck in what she just saw on the news.
I would be too, especially because like she spends most of her time alone and she lives right there. So I would be terrified, especially if it's like, we don't know if it's like a serial killer or what.
No, one murdered woman in a 10-mile radius of me, absolutely not. I'm immediately terrified being alone at all. And we did see a picture of this victim, and she looks to be like a woman around our main girl Julia's age.
Does she have blonde hair?
She doesn't. Okay. She does have brown hair. Francis can see that she's distracted, so he asks her what's up, and she obviously says nothing, and he knows that that's bullshit. So he gives her a look, and she immediately spills, and she tells him that there's a guy that lives across the street, and he's always looking over here. And kudos to Francis. He implores for more information, and he wants to hear her out, and he's like, looking over here how?
Yeah.
And she says, every time I look over there, he's just standing in his window, and it's like he's staring right at me. And he asks which window is his, and she points it out to him, and he says, he doesn't see anything. So
there's nobody there right now. I was literally just about to be like, oh my God, he's being like the best right now, because usually like a husband in this situation in a horror film is like, you're being silly.
Yes.
Nothing's happening. So I was excited, and then, well.
And then he says that. But she's like, well, he's only looking over here at night, or at least I can only see him at night. He might be, and then she just like stops because she's starting to doubt herself and feel like she's probably overreacting.
Yeah. It's oh
like,
my God. Yeah.
We can relate. But Francis is like, no. If you're feeling uncomfortable about something, we should talk about it. But she decides to brush it off and she's like, no, it's fine. So like that one comment of like, I don't see anything. It's like, okay, it doesn't seem like he's totally shut off either.
That's good.
But I think also it's a little bit of commentary on even a good man, a good person, is not quick to believe a woman.
Yeah.
So we cut to that night, and Francis's coworker Nikolai and his wife Lucia are over for dinner now. And the vibe at dinner is mostly Julia feeling left out because their guests keep speaking Romanian. Specifically Nikolai, even though he does speak English. And exactly.
Kind of rude.
There's a lot of inside jokes, like from work happening. It's not great. So Francis tries to bring up something that Julia can actually be in on. And he talks about what they walked past the other night and how the next day that crime scene was being reported on the news. And Nikolai saw it too. And he starts talking about it in Romanian.
Bro.
And at one point he says something that surprises Francis and maybe scares him a little bit. And Francis goes, bullshit. So obviously Julia's like, what?
I want to know.
And the three others are just looking around at each other. So Julia follows it up with, do I need to leave so the grown-ups can talk?
Ooh, get him.
Get him. I loved her for that line. And Lucia is the one to explain. She says, they're saying the woman had her head cut off.
Oh.
And Nikolai is like, yeah, it must be related to the other attacks. They found a woman about, exactly, just drops this casually. Oh. They found a woman about a month ago with her throat slit in her apartment around the same age. But this one, he cut so deep, it was essentially a decapitation.
Oh my God.
They're calling him the spider.
Ew. No, they're not. You know what? Oh, you made it worse. Not the spider.
I knew you wouldn't like that one. And then the conversation switches back into like full Romanian again. So Julia just stands up and heads to the kitchen to take care of her dishes, which Lucia does offer to help with, but she says no.
Right.
And Julia ends up leaving the apartment while they're still chattering away. And she just goes to take out some garbage. On her way down the stairs, she comes upon a woman who's saying goodbye to a man. and the woman is around Julia's age, probably late 20s, and she has this cool dark pixie cut and cigarette between her fingers, and this guy is like trying to kiss her goodbye, but the energy is like she's not that into it, but she's letting him.
Yeah.
And then the man leaves and the woman notices Julia and says hi, and she's like, oh, you must be the new tenant. And Julia nods, happy to hear some English.
Yeah.
And they get to talking, and this woman asks if Julia can ever hear her in her apartment. So she's right through that wall. They share a wall. Julia says no and asks the same question in return. And this girl's like, no, you're suspiciously quiet, and I love you for this. I'm Irina. So Julia introduces herself. They're hitting it off immediately, and Irina tells her to just bang on her wall if she's ever making too much noise. So that's nice. It's really nice to like have a little someone to talk to, a little bit of a, I wouldn't say friend yet, but like someone who could, you can just talk to and like go to. She seems really, really open to a friendship as well. So
yeah, it's comforting.
Yes. The next day, Julia is out and about and comes across a newspaper with the victim from the other night on the front page. So she ends up buying it and does some of her own research on her laptop while she's back at that cafe again, now that she has like the victim's name. And she finds out that it's the fourth victim with what seems to be the same MO in the last 3 months.
Oof.
So yeah, we're getting to serial killer territory.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are. I don't know what the official, is there an official number? It's got to be less than four.
I think it's three, and it has to span a certain amount of time. Because like three in one day, I think, is like a massacre.
Oh.
And then three over a longer period of time is like, okay, now that's a serial killer. I think it's officially a serial killer.
Yeah, and if it's like, if they have an MO to like a very specific ritual that just gives serial killer, and
And I hate that they, like the media gives these people names like the spider.
Absolutely. It's horrible.
Because you know they're loving that.
They love that shit.
So she comes upon an article that I paused on and read through. And the most chilling detail from this article is that the victim, Anna, her head was set on the coffee table of her apartment facing the TV.
Ew, no. I hate it.
Those little things like that are so disgusting and scary. And all the victims have been women between the ages of 21 and 28. So women are advised not to walk alone at night in Bucharest at this time. There's also an interview from a woman that claims to have been attacked by who she believes was the spider, but she managed to get away. And in her interview, she says, I woke up and I hate this. I hate this so much.
Oh my God.
No, this is, okay. This is a big, what would you do?
You haven't even said anything yet. And I already have chills, dude. I'm like, help.
I woke up and saw a man standing over me in the dark, like in her bedroom. He put a pillowcase over my head so I couldn't see his face. He held a knife to my throat and pressed down. But then he stopped and just sat next to me, watching me.
Oh my God.
I think he was watching me before. I just had a sense that someone was always behind me. First of all,
my whole body just tensed up. I'm not joking. Like, I'm sitting here like, no, thank you.
Oh my God. A man standing over my bed. I just open my eyes and there's a man standing there looking down at me.
You know what? The funny thing is, like, the knife is the least scary part about it. I'm more terrified of the thought of him sitting on my bed and just staring at me. Again, it's just it's a simple, like, trope in horror, just staring. But it's so effective because it's terrifying.
It's kind of similar to that run versus walk where it's like attack versus stare.
Yeah,
it's like they know they're gonna get you when they want to.
Yes, that's it right there.
Ugh. As we hear this portion of the interview, we see Julia is walking like through the city now, and she has that interview playing in her headphones. It's daytime, so at least there's that.
Yay.
But we see a man dressed in dark clothing walking behind her. There's probably about like a good 50 feet between them, so it's not right there.
Okay, is this a busy street or?
There's other people around. Yeah, she's like around the town square. But the man gets closer and closer, and when he's right beside her, Julia kind of whips around, but then he just keeps walking ahead, like in a rush to get wherever he's going. So it's basically just like letting us know that Julia's understandably growing a bit paranoid.
Yeah, the paranoia is real.
But she's made it to her destination, a movie theater. And it's one of those artsy theaters that has just one movie playing every day. And it's like usually a classic.
Right.
So today it is showing Charade from 1963, starring Audrey Hepburn. And Julia makes her way into one of her seats. Okay. I don't know why I said one of her seats. Like, she owns this whole theater. Julia makes her way into one of the seats with her little popcorn bucket. And it's a pretty empty theater. Not too empty, where it's like, okay, we're unsafe and alone. But there's like only 4 or 5 other people in there with her, along with like a couple making out at the back, you know, that
always,
type of vibe.
Always.
And at one point during the movie, someone new walks in. And like I said, it's pretty empty in here. But this guy decides to sit in the seat directly behind Julia.
I can't do this. I feel this man behind me right now.
Yeah.
Like it.
I love a movie theater, but I hate a movie theater. I get very paranoid in them. I'm like thinking about exits.
See, I never felt that way.
Oh, well.
Well, now I do. Thank you. Now I'm going to be thinking about that. Who's behind me?
Movie theaters are so safe. Like, I've never felt safer. It's
oh, true. Thank you.
Her alarms are immediately firing off in her head, but she tries to stay calm and focus on the movie because, again, she's like, okay, whatever. I'm just nervous right now because of A, B, and C. Like, this is fine. But the guy then leans forward in his seat to get closer to her, and we can, like, hear him breathing against the back of her neck.
No.
And then we, the audience, see half of his face, and it's dark, but it looks like creepy window guy.
No.
The breathing is enough for Julia. She stands up. She gets out of there.
Does she turn around and look at him?
Yes. When she looks back, when she's like heading up the aisle, he's there in his seat just looking forward at the screen. So she doesn't see his face.
Okay.
So from the theater, she heads to like a pharmacy, groceries, like a Walgreens type of store.
Okay.
And at the dinner with Francis's coworkers the other day, it came up that she quit smoking a couple months ago, but now she is here buying a pack of Marlboros. I can never say this. Marlboros.
Marlboro. Yeah, I don't know how to say that word either, actually.
Marlboro. Say it. So she's about to buy a pack, or at least, you know, she's about to. The cashier hands them to her and is like ringing her up when she decides against it and grabs a little basket instead to do a little grocery shopping.
Yes, so girly.
She's in the fruit aisle putting some mangoes or whatever in her basket. And a couple aisles over, we see a man standing there looking at.
I'm done. I'm like so done right now.
You know what's so scary is it's like daytime at a grocery store. Like, what do you mean I need to be scared right now?
I don't want to be.
So he's standing there looking at an end cap, but he's got the same coat as the guy from the theater. So we're on edge again.
Okay.
She walks down a new aisle. Guess who's suddenly in that aisle too now? She looks over at him, staring at his shoes and like working her way up because she's kind of nervous to like get caught looking, I think.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so she's like taking her time because she wants to see. She obviously is thinking about creepy window guy and she wants to see his face, but she's like scared because she doesn't want to make this weird or like cause any sort of aggression from him if this is that guy. You know, you get it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So she is working her way up and she gets to like his jaw when he starts to turn and look at her. So she quickly averts her gaze.
Yeah.
And then there's this shot where she exits the aisle from one end and he watches her before exiting that same aisle on the other end. Like, okay, this shot is really cool. So I want to like explain it.
Sure.
Well, we follow her. We're like at her side, looking sideways at her, and we can see the aisles passing by.
Yes. Okay.
And then in the back, we can see that this guy is in step with her on the other end of all of these aisles, passing aisle after aisle with her.
What does he want, dude?
So she makes it to the back wall of the store and she's been noticing everything along with us. So she's expecting this guy to be right there at the end of this last aisle, but he's not. So she turns the opposite way and it gets a little frantic. It feels like we're in like a grocery maze and she doesn't want to see him as much as she wants to have eyes on him because she's scared that he's gonna like jump her at this point. Eventually she sees him again, just standing there staring at whatever is in front of him, but like he's not moving. He's clearly not really looking at whatever he's looking at.
Yeah, he's just pretending.
Like, he's clearly placing himself exactly where he wants to be seen by her.
Okay.
She's startled. She jumps back and accidentally. What the fuck? She's startled and she jumps back and accidentally knocks over a jar of pickles, which shatter on the floor. And she panics and she rushes into a back storage room that's for employees only.
Oh.
Which, like, I wouldn't, like, I get that she's trying to just get away and hide and stuff, but I would be, like, not going to a dark room that not a lot of people are.
Yeah, no, because as terrifying as this is, and, like, I absolutely justified the fear and everything, like, I would feel a tad bit of relief knowing that there were people around.
Exactly.
Because it's, like, I just feel like something, not that things can't happen in public and stuff, but it's just a lot less likely when there's tons of people. So, like, yep. I don't know. I feel like I'd be scared to leave the store, or like you said, like, why would you go into a back room?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever, like, been in a situation? Probably not. You probably would have told me by now because we talk so much horror. But have you ever been in a situation where you, like, are considering asking someone to walk you to your car because of, like, someone has made you uncomfortable or scared?
I don't know. I definitely have never gotten to that point. I'm sure there have been moments where I've been a little bit uncomfortable with somebody.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that's happened, but I can't think of a specific example where it was, like, severe enough, you know?
Yeah, not enough. Well, what's hard with this situation, too, is, like, you're just in a city. Like, you gotta just walk to the subway and get home. Like, there's no safety with your car, which is a big thing for me. I'm like, once I'm in my car, yeah. I'm free. Like, I can drive where I need to go. So, like, that's one thing that's scary about city life.
Right. I think with this situation right now, like, what my brain wants her to do, you know, like, a big part of this podcast is the fact that, you know, we sit there and we yell at these characters, like, why aren't you doing this? But, like, what would you really do? Though, what I'm yelling at her right now is, like, to walk to a police station or something, but, like, stay in public. Like, that would be the smartest thing to do. Just be like, hey, because, like, going home is not a good idea because you don't want him to follow you because you don't know. Like, she thinks it's the window guy, but what if it's just some random stalker? You don't want to bring him to your house. But I don't know, man.
Yeah, that's probably is the smartest, just going, walking amongst people where it's, like, there's people around, walking to a police station.
Right, because they say if you feel like you're being followed in your car, you should just drive to a police station.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, in this situation, walk there.
Yeah. So when she goes into this, like, storage room, it's one of those swinging doors with a little circle window in it. Mm-hmm. So she peers out of that window and she sees the man walk up to the broken pickle jar glass. Again, like, the man knows that she's watching him because he slowly starts to turn his head around again to look at her. But that is when an employee comes from another part of the storage room and he's speaking Romanian, but he clearly sees Julia and is probably saying, like, hey, what are you doing back here?
Yeah.
And Julia just asks if there's a back door, and he points to one, which she immediately runs out of, getting the hell out of there.
Okay.
We cut to that night, and Julia is really out of it over dinner. It's just her and Francis and some takeout, and he's updating her on work things that are apparently going well, but of course, eventually the conversation turns to what happened to her the other day, and he's a little concerned. He asks if this guy said anything to her, or I don't know if it was the other day, so I don't know how much time passed, if this is like that same evening or if it's the other day, but like, semantics, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, the whole situation with the theater and the grocery store comes up, and Francis is a little concerned. He asks if this guy said anything to her or if she thinks he followed her to the apartment, to which she says no to. So he tries to comfort her with some cuddles, and he's like, the good news is if he ever comes here, you have your big strong man to protect you. Exactly. So she laughs. She laughs at that because, like, yeah, it's a cheesy line. And he's like,
so cheesy.
He's like, okay, I'm going to pretend you didn't just laugh at that. And, like, the energy is very light and playful. So he goes in for a kiss, and it starts off very passionate. But then she, like, suddenly pulls back, like she felt scared all of a sudden for some reason. Oh. And she apologizes, like, confused herself why she just reacted like that. And he's just like, of course, understanding, and says he totally gets it. She's just on edge right now. And, like, I don't know if she just has a thing where she's in her head about men right now, because this is, like, a man that is possibly stalking her, and she's just uncomfortable in general with, I don't know if that's where her brain went.
Yeah, that's weird.
But he gets serious again, asking if she wants to go to the supermarket to see if they have any security tapes that they could look at. So they do.
Oh.
Yeah, W. Francis for that idea.
Yeah, that's actually... See, because, like, I just... Again, I'm just so used to in horror films, it's always, like, no, you're overreacting. No, this definitely didn't happen. Like, that's always what the main character gets from people around them. And
yes.
To have someone actually being like, all right, let's go check it out, is just refreshing.
Yes. It's a huge theme in this movie that I think was done a certain way on purpose, that, like, I love that you're just already catching and appreciating. It's just like they're a normal couple and he's like mm-hmm. a normal nice guy, and
that's so rare.
Sure, he has moments where he's like, well, I don't see anything, like, and maybe anyone would, because it's mm-hmm. just that natural human instinct to not go there right away.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's like really interesting how he and their relationship and his response to what's happening to her progresses throughout the movie. Francis ends up talking to the same guy that caught Julia in the storage room.
Okay.
He's pretty upset and, like, basically thought she was trying to steal, but they explain the situation and then the guy agrees to show them the footage that they're looking for.
Okay, cool.
So the three of them huddle around the security cam TVs and find that moment from earlier that she was in the store, and after reviewing it, she's like, yes, that's him. Watch, he follows me around, and when I drop the pickle jar, he walks up to it and then he stares right at me through the storage room window.
Mm-hmm.
And Francis is like, yeah, maybe. And because, like, they watch, they see this.
Yeah.
But also he's like, he could just be staring at the woman who's staring at him. It's clear that she's immediately on edge when he enters the store, and she's immediately keeping her eye on him from the jump.
Right.
So she doesn't really say anything to that. It's possible, but she's still very freaked out and leaning towards suspicion. So she just takes a picture of the man on the screen with her phone, and they leave.
If the whole movie theater thing didn't happen, I would actually... like, totally get where Francis is coming from. Like, you've been staring at him the whole time, so maybe he's mm-hmm. uncomfortable that you're staring at him. But, like, if he actually followed from the theater, then yeah, then it's him.
Exactly. The next morning, Francis makes Julia some breakfast before heading out for work. And before he goes, he lets her know that he has to go to dinner with some clients tonight, so he's going to be out kind of late.
Oh, no.
It's always a letdown when you hear that, because you know something's going to go down.
Yeah.
Most of that day and then into the night, Julia spends sitting at the corner of her window with the curtains mostly drawn, but, like, peeking out with a view into the creepy man window.
Okay.
Waiting to see if he'll be back, but he never is. It's just completely dark in his apartment. And then there's a knock at her door, which is, like, literally the scariest thing in the whole world. Being home alone, it's pitch black nighttime.
Uh-huh.
And a knock at your door? No, this happened to me once. It's so silly. Well, it's happened to me a couple times where someone knocks on my door, and around by me, it's usually just someone trying to sell something, and it's very... Mm-hmm. doesn't happen very often, so
yeah.
But one time it was, like, literally probably only like 7:30 p.m. okay, but it was dark out,
but it was nighttime.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm sitting in my living room and there's a knock at my door, and I'm like, I think this was it was before Karma as well, so, like, no barking, no anything. It's just, like, me in silence, terrified, and I'm like, okay, no one's gonna answer, so they're gonna leave,
right?
They knock again.
No,
and I'm
no,
like,
no, no, no,
I hate when you knock twice. Like, that, it's too much for me. They knock a third time.
Not a third time.
At this point, I think I left my phone, like, in the kitchen for some reason, which is weird. But, like, I remember crawling on my hands and knees.
Mm-hmm. No, I've done that. I've crouched around to avoid, like, the window. I've done it.
Crawled on my hands and knees to my kitchen because I'm like, I need to call somebody. And what's going on? This person would not stop knocking.
Like, you have a peephole on your door?
I don't. I only I have one of those doors that has, like, a window in it, but I have a curtain over it.
Okay.
But then when I got to my phone, my mom was calling me, and I was like, what the heck? And I answer, and she's like, your sister's at your front door. We have cupcakes for you.
Oh, my God.
And she's like, I told her to text you. I told her not to keep knocking. I knew you'd be freaked out. I'm so sorry. But I was like, oh, my God. It was actually so nice because, like, the week before, I was like, I'm craving cupcakes. So they just got cupcakes for me and, like, dropped them off. And it was so nice.
They were being sweet, but you were scared for your freaking life.
I thought I was going to die that day. So back to the movie, the knocking becomes urgent and, like, almost desperate, just like my sister with those cupcakes.
Oh,
same, yeah. Same vibe. The pounding gets louder. This door is literally shaking on its hinges.
Oh, geez.
But thank God they have a peephole. She looks out and decides to open the door because it's just an old lady.
It's just an old lady.
Just an old lady. I don't trust old people. I don't trust anyone. I've seen too many old people in horror movies now.
That's exactly it. Like, old ladies in horror films, dude, I've seen shit and I'm mm-hmm. terrified now.
Mm-hmm. So when she opens the door, the Romanian starts flowing, and all we can really pick up on is the fact that this woman is in a panic.
Oh.
And then we randomly pick up on the word Elvis, and we're more confused than ever.
Yes, we are. We really are.
But then the neighbor, Irina, comes around the corner, just getting home, and she overhears and explains that this woman is looking for her cat. Her cat, Elvis, has gone missing.
Okay.
So Julia's like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I haven't seen a cat. So this woman huffs away, probably off to the next tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And Julia thanks Irina for translating, and that usually her husband is the one to do that, but he's still at work. And Irina's like, working at 10 p.m.? Is he a stripper? And we're like, no, but he's in marketing. He's with some clients. And Irina understands, but then thinks to herself for a second before asking, do you want to come inside for a drink? I feel like another one, and it's less sad if there's another person with me. They're bonding on Irina's couch over glasses of wine, and we find out that Irina studied ballet in London years ago, and she really remembers and relates to how hard it was, especially those first couple months in a foreign city. She couldn't speak much English, so she really empathizes with what Julia is going through right now, and she's happy that she at least has her husband in this situation. And then there's a knock at Irina's door. Lots of knocking happening. It's
yeah.
awful. I'm not a fan. But no. We hear a man on the other side say, Irina, and Irina knows immediately who is at her door, and she gets annoyed. Yep. She stands up, and she's arguing with this guy through the door in Romanian, and it gets heated to the point where the guy punches the door on the other side Ooh. Before he does finally leave. And we find out that it's her ex that won't leave her alone.
Oh, jeez. Ugh.
And Julia's like, he sounded kind of scary, but Irina laughs that off, saying it's all for show and he's actually pretty sweet and he knows not to cross the line. And Julia asks, what if he does? And Irina imitates firing a gun, which makes Julia laugh. And Ugh. Irina like laughs along, but then she's like, I'm serious. And then and then she looks at like one of the drawers in her coffee table in front of them, telling Julia to open it. So she does. And there's a pistol in there.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, this ex of hers gave this to her as a present when they were together to defend herself. And Irina says, I think he regrets it now because it just makes it easier for me to tell him to go fuck himself. And Julia's like, you know what? Get it, girly. I should tell more people to go fuck themselves, too. And Irina starts teaching her Romanian cuss words, and they have a great night hanging out together. And later on, Julia returns back to her apartment a little tipsy and with a newfound confidence. And she's like, okay.
Heck yeah.
I am done being scared. And she walks over to their big window that currently has its curtains drawn, and she pulls them wide open.
Oh, she's here, everybody.
Creepy window man is there.
Of course he is.
And she stares up at him and says to herself, you're not really looking in here, are you? Like, she's like, I can't, I know I'm imagining this. I'm
yeah,
just
like, maybe he just likes to look out his window and he's yeah. looking around and you just think he's looking at you, right?
Yes, yes.
Right?
So she decides to lift a hand up and she waves.
Ooh.
Like, to okay. see if this guy even really sees her in here. It like really drags out, like you think he's not gonna, but then like unfortunately his silhouette, like he slowly lifts up his hand and just like goes like this.
Ew.
Like a really, really soft wave. When Francis gets home, he finds Julia sitting on their bed smoking a cigarette.
Oh no.
Yeah. And he immediately asks what's wrong.
Yeah, right.
So she tells him what happened, and he storms over to their window looking out. And she tells him again which window it is, because, of course, like now his lights are all off and Francis can't see inside these windows.
Yeah.
But Julia's like, I know he's in there. So Francis gives the window a middle finger. And Julia tells him that she wants to call the cops. And Francis is like, is that really necessary?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, yes. So. Cut to a police officer sitting down with Julia in their living room as she fills him in on everything that's happened to her.
Claps. Claps. I love it. I love to hear it.
I love when cops get involved early on because now yes. I'm like, okay, this, because I think I would as well. Like, I'd want to report it. I wouldn't expect much to come out of it at this point, but I don't know. Like, one time, this is a crazy side story for me to give really quick, but I'm going to keep it short and just say that one time I had a roommate who was living with me and she got these texts from someone who was telling her that he had been assigned to assassinate her and she was a hitman and that he's been watching her for a long time.
That's so scary.
The texts were really scary. The thing is though that she put her phone number on like a missing dog poster for her cousin.
Oh.
So it's just an asshole. But
still, I would be so scared.
The texts were very scary, and so she took them to the police, and uh-huh. the police were like, okay, we're just going to do some extra drive-bys and keep an eye on your house this week. Like, there's nothing more you can do there, but yeah. I think that's, again, what I would do if I was her, just to be like, can we have some extra eyes around here right now? Because yeah. this is getting weird.
I think, like, it would just make me feel a little more comforted to know that I've reported it. Like, I honestly probably wouldn't, just because this is a situation where I would just, like, feel like, I don't know, I'd be, like, embarrassed to report it, which is so stupid, but I would feel like, maybe I'm being ridiculous, maybe it's just an old man, mm-hmm. a lonely old man who just is just, that's, he's just looking over here, kind of yeah. innocently. Oh, man.
Yeah, especially because she hasn't gotten, like, a clear shot of his face. Like, she got right. it in some grainy VHS, like, security tapes, like, kind, not even full, like, straight on. So,
yeah.
She's seen enough where she's like, it very well could be the same guy, but she hasn't seen like enough to know that it's the same guy and
right,
even
exactly.
be able to be confident in telling the story like, this is the same guy that did this, 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 and this.
Absolutely right.
But she tells the cop everything, the window situation, the movie theater, the supermarket. She shows him the picture that she has from the security footage. And the officer seems a little skeptical, mostly because she's saying that she thinks it's the same guy, but she's also saying that she hasn't gotten that clear look at him.
Yep.
But either way, he's like, well, I'll go across the street and talk to the guy in that unit and tell yeah. him to stop looking over here because that's impolite. And
yeah,
I'm like, wow.
Okay. Cool.
You know what? Romanian police being like, I'm going to go tell someone to have manners is so nice.
Amazing. No, that would make me feel so good. Although I'd yeah. be like, hey, once you talk to him, can you come back and tell me like what he's like to, what he says?
He actually offers to have Julia come along.
Oh.
So that she can get a proper look at this guy and be able to confirm whether it's the same man from the supermarket. But that makes her nervous. Mm-hmm. And she says she doesn't think that's a good idea. But Francis is like, I'll go. I want to see this guy.
Oh, okay. I would be cool with that. I understand not wanting to go like yourself. I probably wouldn't want to go either.
Yeah. This whole situation right now is very much like, yep, this is how I would do it. This is how I would do it. Check, check, check.
She's checking all the boxes.
And I guess the plan is that Francis will stick around down the hall and try to get a glimpse at him without the guy realizing that he's there.
Okay.
So the officer and Francis head over and she tries to watch from her window, but she doesn't really see anything, like mm-hmm. not even a light turn on. So when Francis gets back, she's like, what happened? Was it him? And Francis looks kind of uncomfortable and he's like, look, even if it was him, he lives in our same neighborhood. It's not crazy to think that you guys were at the same supermarket. She's like, okay, great. He's just going to like try to rationalize everything. And she's starting to get defensive because he clearly thinks that she is tipping into crazy territory now.
Oh.
So he's like, I don't think you're crazy. Because she calls him out on it. Like, oh, so you're going to act like I'm crazy. He's like, I don't think you're crazy. I think you're stressed. I think you're in a new country and you're home alone all day. And she's pissed and she cuts him off, telling him to stop talking to her like she's a child.
Yeah.
And she's starting to cry now out of frustration. And she tells him that she wants to leave. And he's like, whoa, what? Like, you want to go back to New York? What do you want me to do? And she yells at him, I want you to fucking believe me. And he's like, you know, this is just a bad night. You're still adjusting here. And she's like, no, I can't stand it here. I feel like I'm losing my mind. So he asks what he can do to help her. And she just looks at him and ends up saying nothing.
Oh, yeah. She's just kind of over it.
It's like he thinks, I understand why he thinks that's a possibility.
Yeah.
But I'm also just like, ugh, just it seems clear that she just needs him to be there for her.
Right.
And I think his way of being there for her is trying to calm her down by being like, this is why you're thinking this way. Like, it's no big deal. And I'm sure he wants to believe that. She wants to believe that too. But it's at that point where she's like, nah, I need someone to like be in this with me and like help me.
Yeah. Like, I don't think he's a terrible person for like what he's doing. I do understand.
Yeah. He doesn't like raise his voice. He does. He's like, he doesn't come off as an asshole throughout the situation, but it's still like a letdown to the audience to be like, shoot, like we want you on our side.
Yep.
The next day, Julia goes out and buys another pack of cigarettes. And I know. And she's in what appears to be like a town square with these open cobblestone. It's like this open cobblestone area when she sees this guy. And it's the brown jacket supermarket guy.
Okay.
And he is walking across the square with a plastic bag in his hand. And it doesn't appear like he realizes that she's around or is seeing him at all right now.
Okay.
So she starts following him. Mm. She follows him all over town, watches him like feed some birds, watches him sit down at a small cafe for a quick bite to eat. And then he ends up going down like this dark alley and disappearing into a pretty sketchy looking building. And she loses sight of him, but she ends up following in his footsteps. And inside this building, there's some random guy sitting on a chair. She's like, hi, what is this place? And she finds out that this is a club. And she's talking to the bouncer. So she goes inside and there are a bunch of like naked women dancing in these big glass boxes.
Oh, fun.
And then she sees the guy and he's in a supply closet in the back and he appears to be like a janitor for this place because he's getting a mop bucket set up to do some cleaning. And all of a sudden he becomes very still, like he senses that he's being watched. And he starts, it happens so much throughout the movie, he starts to slowly turn to look at her again.
Yeah.
But she jumps back out of his line of sight and accidentally bumps into one of the glass boxes.
Ooh.
And the girl inside leans down and looks at her and is like, Julia? And it's Irina, our neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
So we cut to Julia and Irina together in a break room. And Irina's like, you followed him here?
Yeah.
And Julia's like, yeah, like this guy's been watching me since we moved in. And she asks, do you know him? Like, he seems to be a cleaner here. But Irina shrugs and is just like, people come and go here all the time.
Yeah.
And when Julia asks Irina if she's felt like anyone has been watching her in her apartment, she says no. So Julia asks if she just sounds paranoid. Like, she's going to her as a friend, like, be honest. Like, I'm laying it all out. Do I sound paranoid? Like, my boyfriend or husband clearly thinks I am.
Yeah.
And Irina says, let's just hope you never have to find out. The best outcome would be that you just have to live with the uncertainty. Which is, like, true, I guess, but no. Ooh. Thank you.
Yeah, like, that sounds like anxiety to the max.
No, I cannot live like that. I'd be like, cool, so I will be booking that flight to New York.
Uh-huh.
That night at the apartment, she puts a chair under the doorknob of the front door and then ends up falling asleep in bed while she's watching a show on her MacBook. But she's startled awake to some noise happening in Irina's apartment again.
Oh.
It starts with a dull thud, but then there's a scream and then another louder thud. So she ends up rushing down the hall and starts knocking on Irina's door, like worried for her.
Yeah.
She's freaking out, pounding on that door to the point where she's making a scene and like other tenants start coming out into the hall being like, what the hell's going on? And Flavia, the landlord, shows up and Julia's like, we need the key. We need to open this door. Someone is hurting her in there.
Mm-hmm.
Flavia does end up opening Irina's apartment door and she walks inside. And it's dark in there and it seems like nobody is home. Flavia says as much.
Oh.
But Julia insists, like, I heard screaming.
Yep.
Someone is here. So they start looking around a little more. And in one of the side room lounging areas, they see a lamp has been knocked over. And there's a cat near it. And of course, at this point, a bunch of the tenants are nosy and looking around in this apartment as well.
Yeah, they're like, ooh, little tour.
Yes. And one of them is that old lady. And she's like, oh my God, Elvis. So like...
My cat.
I guess Irina's been secretly like taking care of this cat for some reason. She's like,
that's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Because she overheard the conversation.
Exactly. Like, I'm pretty sure Elvis was in her apartment at that time, and she just low-key just stole this old lady's cat. I'm like, okay,
girl, what?
Exactly. It's just never brought up again either. Like,
that's crazy.
But anyways, cut to Flavia ranting to Francis in Romanian in the apartment lobby. And Julia is seeing this from the staircase. Like, she's kind of in the shadows, like watching this happen. And she asks him later on, like, what was said in that conversation. And he just says that Flavia doesn't want any tenants that are going to cause trouble.
Oop.
Then we cut to the next morning, and Francis and Julia are drinking coffee at their kitchen table, and he ends up apologizing for how much he's been working. But she's being understanding and says that it's his job, and she understands how important it is to him.
Yeah.
And this is, like, the first time they've properly talked since their argument the other night. There's okay. still definitely an energy there, but I think that at this point, she's just sort of coming to terms with the fact that he's more concerned for her than for the situation.
Okay.
He seems, genuinely concerned for, like, her mental health.
Yeah.
So she's just, like, putting out a certain calm energy so as not to stress him out any further, in my opinion. And he says, no surprise, that he's going into work and that after.
Yep.
They're supposed to have cocktails if she's down to come and hang out and, like, go to this cocktail party for work with him. And she agrees to it.
Okay.
So as soon as he's gone, she calls up that club that Irina works at.
Okay. Why? Yeah.
To ask if she came into work today, because she doesn't think that she came home last night.
Wait, but we still didn't, like, the scream. There was a scream.
Exactly. So at this point, I think she's like, she either feels like it's impossible to get through to these people because they're just like, obviously it was just the cat. You're hearing things. You're overreacting. Yeah. So she's like, whatever. I'll figure this out on my own.
Okay.
Or it's also possible that she's like, am I now hearing things? Like, I'm that paranoid.
Right.
So she calls them because she knows that Irina didn't come home that night. She was listening for any more noise. And they, her job, hasn't heard anything from her either, presumably since her last shift. So she then hears knocking happening out in the hallway at Irina's door. And there's this man around our age there, and he asks if she knows where she is. So, of course, Julia's like, no. And this guy says that they were supposed to meet at his apartment after she was done with work last night.
Oh.
So Julia asks him if he has her phone number, and he does. So she dials that into her own phone and gives Irina a call. It's like, apparently he's been calling her too, but this is the ex and she just doesn't answer.
Yeah, right.
We give her a call, and they hear Irina's phone start ringing in her apartment.
Oh, God. Hate it.
Yeah. This ex of hers is annoyed because he thinks he's being stood up and ignored per usual.
Okay. I don't blame him, I guess.
Yeah. It's like when you're in that pattern already, I can see how this wouldn't seem alarming.
Yeah.
And he's about to leave, but Julia stops him and asks if he could help her with something. And we cut to Julia and Irina's ex in an elevator and find out that they are in creepy window man's apartment. And she wants him to go and knock on this guy's door and get him to come out so that she can see what he looks like from down the hall. Your face right now.
Sorry, I'm like trying to figure out what the hell is happening. Sorry.
So concerned with this decision.
I'm very concerned. I'm upset, actually.
No, because my thing is like avoid, avoid, avoid. Like this is poking the bear to me. But like
it is.
I think it's just she's feeling so crazy that she just needs to know what this person looks like.
Yeah. No, I understand.
I understand, but I can't relate.
Right. Exactly where I'm at, too.
So she explains to this guy what she's been through and why she wants to do this. And he's like super chill. He's like, yeah, the cops are fucking useless. Let's do this. He's just down. So he knocks and we get no answer. He knocks again. No answer. Julia asks him to just try one more time. And this time he pounds on the door and starts yelling through it in Romanian because he thinks that he hears someone on the other side and they're just not answering.
Okay.
But like there's not much you can do from there. So he just walks over to Julia and is like, I tried. I'm sorry. And she asks him what he said. And he's like, oh, just to stop bothering you. And then he goes, I wouldn't worry about it. He probably just has a little crush on you.
Yeah, exactly.
It just goes back to like inappropriate behavior from like adolescent, prepubescent even, like boys. It kind of happens with girls too, but it's definitely more prevalent in boys of like treating girls like shit. Yeah. And they're like, oh my God, he has a crush on you. It's like, oh no, let's not.
That's not what I want him to do though.
Anyways, this is a busy guy. So he's getting a phone call. He's got places to be. So he's like, I gotta go. And he rushes back down the hall to the elevator. But Julia stays. And she's looking down that hallway to this guy's apartment door. And she decides to go over and try knocking herself.
No. Absolutely not. You think this guy's trying to get you, so you go up to his door by yourself.
Yeah.
Absolutely not, girly. This is stupidity to the max. Absolutely not. I'm not doing that. I understand. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm getting heated. Like, I get that you're, like, at the point nobody else believes you and you're just so frustrated and you need answers, but this is not – this ain't it. This is not the solution. Okay.
Especially with what's been going on in this town.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm so mad right now.
Somebody answers.
What?
It's, like, this really old, grumpy man. And he says something in Romanian, and all we can pick up on is the fact that he's very annoyed that these people won't stop knocking on his door.
Wait, so he's like an old, old man.
Old, old. And it's not, but this is not the brown jacket man. Like, right, it's not the same guy. So she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she hurries back down the hall to the elevator and pushes the elevator button. And while she's waiting, to her left, there's like this open staircase. Mm-hmm. And guess who's standing in that, looking up at her?
No.
It's the guy. It's the stalker.
Wait, so did we just determine, though, that the old man in the window is truly just an old man who likes to look out the window?
No.
But like, isn't that where she just went?
Yeah.
Did this man look like the man from the window, I guess is what I'm asking?
No.
Okay.
So when I first watched this, I was like, did we get the wrong door? Like the wrong apartment somehow? Because that can be confusing. That's where my mind was. Because I was like, that is not the man from the window.
Okay. So it could be like maybe his son or something lives with him. Or I don't know. Like something like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the guy like is a little not like I feel like the guy that's stalking her is probably not like super old. He sounds like he's pretty like nimble.
Yeah, from what we've seen, I would guess 40s.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. The elevator arrives just then, so she quickly gets inside. But it's like one of those older elevators where the closing gate is one where you can like still see the floors passing by. So as she starts to lower down, this guy comes and stands right there and looks down into it at her.
Stop it.
It's disgusting. So she's like, okay, so you are in this apartment. Like that's validation enough for her right there.
Yep. Right. He's here.
But anyways, that night she is doing her makeup. Francis is home and they're getting ready to go out to this cocktail party.
Yeah.
And are you so shocked that I'm about to tell you there's a knock at their door?
A knock?
There's so many knocks.
Knock, knock, knock. Who's there?
Who's there is the police officer.
Oh, what's up?
But the police officer isn't alone. Her stalker is standing there with the officer in his little brown coat looking down at the ground. Like he's like, oh, embarrassed to be here.
What? Okay. I mean, I still, listen, I'm not going to lie. Like, there's still a part of me that thinks, like, she's the person that's stalking at this point, and, like, this guy never meant to stalk her, but I don't know.
So the officer starts talking to Julia, introducing this guy, and he says, this is Daniel Weber. He lives in the building across from you. Mr. Weber made a complaint with us today about a neighbor who's been harassing him. Looking in his window, following him around, showing up at his door and threatening his father. Good job on that one.
Yeah, nailed it.
And I remember Mr. Weber from your complaint, and I wanted to resolve this before it goes any further. So how about it? Can we both agree that this is all just one big misunderstanding?
Okay. So, see, I'm upset because, like, part of me is like, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, maybe this is true. Like, they both think the other one is stalking them. Or is he just trying to get ahead of the game and, like, make himself look innocent?
My brain was working the same exact way. Mr. Browncoat steps forward and stretches out a hand to Julia like he's down to shake on it and leave all this behind us.
I don't want to touch you.
Right. She looks at it for a couple moments, thinking just that, but then she gives in, they shake hands, and Francis has been standing to the side very confused this whole time. He doesn't know anything about her going over to his apartment. She just tells him to let her know when they're gone, and she walks back to her bedroom, and she looks pissed. Like, clearly she thinks this guy is messing with her. This hasn't made her feel... Well, actually, I'm not sure. I think she's, like, very 50-50 in her own mind as well. She's, like, pissed either because she's like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Or she's also like, this guy is doing all of this on purpose. Like, he's a master planner.
Right, exactly. So, like, I wouldn't know either. I would be, oh, this would just make it worse. This would make it so much worse.
Yeah. Especially because now the police officer is leaving this feeling like, okay, that's sorted.
Yeah, right. They're no longer going to help you out.
Yeah. So, of course, when they're gone, Francis comes into the bedroom and asks if she's okay, and she nods, and then he hands her his phone and says, I saw this today. And it's a news article, and apparently the police have caught the spider.
Oh.
The guy who found the latest victim was apparently a plumber that was linked to a job for the previous victim, and they found a bunch of her clothes in his apartment.
Mm.
So he had already, this guy had already been in prison for rape, and he will be going back for 4 counts of murder now.
And this was the, so the plumber dude found mm-hmm. the body, but he was the spider?
Yeah.
Dude, come on. That's just amateur work right there.
It is. That night at the cocktail event, Julia is really quiet and reserved, but Francis waves her over to this group of people that he's socializing with. So she goes on over and they seem nice. They say that she's just as beautiful as she was described. And one of the men in the group is like, hey, they caught the spider. It's like so crazy how close you guys lived to one of the victims and that you saw that crime scene. And Julia just feels awkward, like she's been genuinely terrified the last week, and this just isn't really her idea of, like, some fun topic of conversation over cocktails.
It's so different when, like, you're, like, closely either involved or connected in some way, and, like, with everything she's going through, it's, yeah. Like, everyone else, I understand, like, we were talking about the morbid curiosity, being right about it, but, yeah, for her, no.
Yeah, as soon like that just brings it right back to true crime where it's like so easy to talk about these things and be like, isn't that insane? Isn't that scary? It's like there's people in this world who are like, yeah, it fucking is. Please stop.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But unsurprisingly, the conversation switches back to Romanian very quickly. Mm. But this time, Julia is really trying to pay attention and attempts to keep up because all she's been doing since she got here is trying to learn this language.
Yeah.
And when Francis takes part in the conversation himself, the wheels start turning in Julia's head and she's like, wait a minute. She thinks she knows what he just said, but she cuts everyone off and she asks him, what did you just say? And he's like, oh, no, nothing. Just an office inside joke.
Wait, what?
She's like, no, go ahead and tell me what you just said. Like, she knows he's standing there making an inside joke in Romanian, thinking he hasn't known this whole time that she's been working on her Romanian. I think there was a comment at one point where she's like, I'm going to surprise him with it. And so he had no idea that she was going to pick up on what he said. And she's like, go ahead and say what you just said, like calling him out, like, I know what you just said. And it gets super awkward. And everyone in the group is like trying to save Francis and like change the subject before he has to repeat it.
Yeah.
But when he still doesn't tell her, she decides to go ahead and recite it back to him. He said, quote, at least she has the spider to keep her company. So like, apparently that is the inside joke at the office since he's been working so much. Oh. Isn't that fucked up? Like, yeah, I've been working so much. Your wife is at home all alone. Oh, but she's got the spider to keep her company. Like, ever since that victim was like killed in their vicinity.
That's such a weird thing to say.
So
and the fact that it's a joke.
That might be breakup territory for me, honestly. I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's crazy. Ew.
So she's obviously pissed and storms off, like slamming her champagne onto a passing serving tray guy, causing all of the drinks on that tray to smash down onto the ground. She doesn't care.
Girlie is pissed.
She struts out of there.
Work.
But Francis runs after her, and when he catches up, they're alone in the lobby of this place, and he asks her to please stop. So like she swivels around and is like, what are you gonna say, that I can't take a joke? And he says, I'm tired of feeling like this because you can't let go of some fucking fantasy.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, let's make it worse, bud. Keep it up. Keep it up, buddy.
She just shakes her head at that, but she doesn't have anything to say. I think like at this point she does kind of feel bad for spiraling into this paranoia, thinking that this guy was after her and that he could have been the spider. But like now that the guy is caught and she does feel a little ridiculous, she's more just annoyed that her partner is making jokes about her paranoia behind her back. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like this is like serious to her and you're making silly jokes about it.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
So Francis walks away back to the cocktail party and Julia walks to the nearest subway station and gets on the train. It's pretty empty. There's only one other guy sitting a good 10 seats down from her. And then she accidentally falls asleep. When she wakes up, I could never, first of all.
Yeah, no.
I actually literally can't fall asleep sitting up, so that's nice. But oh my God, in public, I could never. When she wakes up, creepy window guy is sitting about 15 down on the opposite wall from her. And even just the way he sits is creepy. He's sitting straight up.
As soon as you said that, yeah, like feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Kind of, yep.
Too perfect posture with both of his hands resting on his knees.
Yep.
Like yep, staring yep, yep. straight ahead. Why is that so creepy? I don't know, because, but it is.
Like, that's not like casual, normal. Nobody sits like that.
And then the subway comes to a stop, but they're surrounded in like complete darkness of the tunnel walls. So like it's not a planned stop.
Yeah.
She'd gotten up right away and approached the doors because she was freaking out and eager to get off. But then like this voice comes on over the speakers that confirms that they're just stopping to do a maintenance check on some sort of thing.
Oh.
So she sits back down and we can see the pulse in her neck quickening because she's in this enclosed space right now with this guy. And
yeah.
Then we hear his footsteps like slowly getting closer and closer to her until he's standing right in front of her and he goes, "It's probably an animal." And she's like, "What?" He takes a seat across from her and says, "The cause of the delay. It could be signal problems or repairs, or sometimes it's because there's an animal on the track. There could be a couple of subway workers chasing a dog as we speak." She nods slowly, still just like shocked that this man is talking to her. And she's like, "So how long does it take?" And he answers, "To catch a dog, not long, if you're fast."
Ew, wait, no, I don't like that. Hold on, wait, whoa. That's got double meaning. Yes. I don't like it.
And then he smiles a little at her, like acknowledging the fact that he's trying to act like he's just trying to be lighthearted, but she's like, "No, you're fucking creepy."
Yeah, that, no.
She just like stares back at him and then he gives an actual answer because the silence, like he realizes she's not appreciating his attempt at humor.
Yeah, it's not funny.
Definitely wasn't an attempt at humor. Like he knows what he's doing. He's like, "It should only take a few minutes, even if it feels longer." And she says, "Thank you." And he says, "You're welcome." And then she gets right down to business and asks him, "Why are you following me?"
Yes, girly, get him. I mean, like, don't, but also get him. I'm scared, but right? Get him.
You gotta be careful. You gotta be careful. He's like, "Well, let me explain."
Wait, hold on. He's not gonna deny it.
Yeah. He goes, "I spend all day looking after my father. He's very sick. And so sometimes I go to the window and just look at people going about their day. I know it's a sad hobby, but no one has really noticed before. You're a really sad old man now," I thought, dreaming up a pretty girl who's finally looking back at you. "But then you waved, and I thought that you were saying hello." Now, at this point, Julia is looking at this plastic supermarket bag that he has sitting on the seat next to him.
Oh, yeah, he had a bag before.
Mm-hmm. And we can't see what's inside it, but she's starting to become a little disturbed. And this guy continues his monologue, and he's like, "When your husband came to my door with a police officer, I didn't understand what I'd done that was so bad and why you kept following me. I wondered if you were trying to embarrass me." And we get a close-up on the bag again, a little closer than last time. And I don't know if the lighting is kind of different this time, but now I'm starting to see like the possible shape of something in that bag.
Oh.
Like a hairline, the indent of an eye socket, and the tip of a nose pressing out against the bag.
What? No. Uh-uh. I'm getting myself. I'm out. I'm jumping out of this freaking train. I don't care. Bye. I'll walk the rest of the way. Thank you very much.
Creepy window guy is still yapping. And he's like, "Or if you were trying to scare me when you came to my door with that man and cursed at my father. I'd hoped that after I had involved the police, that would be the end of it. But I felt that what I really needed was an apology."
Sorry, I'm losing it. I'm losing it over here. I'm doing fine.
This guy's getting pretty worked up now, and Julia has tears, like, clouding her eyes, and she's stuck in her fear, starting to breathe a little heavier, and she just whispers to him, "I'm sorry."
Yeah, like, just...
Oof. Yeah, you gotta just feed into it at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
The voice comes on again over the speakers, and the train starts to move. And as soon as the doors open at the next stop, Julia rushes out and starts to catch her breath. And the guy stays in his seat on the train, watching her the whole time.
I don't even know, like, what to do at that point, because the cops aren't going to believe you.
I think I still would go to them. Like, I'd go although...
I guess you are going to go to them.
Yeah.
But still, I just feel like they're not going to take you seriously. Because they think you're crazy at this point.
Yeah, but now that I know, this guy has a human head in this bag and he lives across the street from me and he knows where I live.
Yeah, no, I do need to tell them.
I would at least have a police escort.
Like, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm curious, like, well, maybe you were about to get into it, but it's like this whole situation's happened and now you go to them and you're like, and he also had a plastic bag with a head in it. Are they going to go check up on that? Are they going to go check on that? Or are they going to go, girly pop, we already resolved this issue. Stop trying to make this worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't care to be believed at this point. I think what I would do is go to the police, say, can I please get an escort back to my apartment? I would have them stay there with me. I would pack a bag. Can I please have an escort to the airport? Goodbye.
Like, adios, amigos.
So Julia gets back to the apartment and she starts packing a suitcase.
Okay.
But while she's packing, she hears music turn on in Irina's apartment.
Oh.
And of course, she's like, huh? And she heads down the hallway and knocks on Irina's door. Nope. I'm sorry. I wouldn't.
At this point, I know I'd be terrified of everything.
I would think I was being lured.
Right.
Irina doesn't answer. So when she doesn't answer, Julia tries the door handle and it's unlocked.
Ooh, no.
And super random, but she hears like a meow. So she looks down the hallway to her right before going into this apartment. And by the stairwell, the cat lady is just standing there with Elvis in her hands, like giving her a dirty, suspicious look. And it's like, okay, exactly. I think Alrighty. It just adds on to like the whole theme of being watched.
Yeah, I was going to say it feels like everybody's just watching everybody in this film.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense.
But Julia's like, whatever. And she looks inside Irina's apartment. Everything looks normal. A couple lamps are on. So she walks inside. When she makes it to like that little nook of the apartment where she found Elvis before.
Yeah.
The camera, like the POV, starts at the floor and we see a pair of legs. And then this person is just sitting on a chair.
Oh.
And as we continue to pan up, we see this woman is in a pajama slip dress. And then when we get all the way to the top, we see that this woman doesn't have a head anymore.
No.
You knew it had to happen.
Oh, man.
So it's Irina. R.I.P. Irina.
R.I.P.
She was a great girl. Julia starts to hyperventilate, struggling to take in what she's seeing. That is when a supermarket plastic bag comes down over her head.
No!
She gets pulled back into someone's chest, and her phone that was in her hand falls out of her grip down to the ground. It's the window stalker. It's the brown jacket guy. It's the spider.
I'm just upset.
I'm also very curious about the man that got put into custody.
Yeah, I fully believe that they actually caught him. I didn't think they were going to end up being connected because I was like, all that stuff happening at once, usually you're like, nah, there's no way. Like, that's a miss. Mm-hmm. They're trying to mislead you, but nope.
She's struggling against him, but then he smacks her in the head, I think just with his fist. Like, I could be wrong, but it happens like really fast and she gets knocked out.
Oh.
So she comes to with this smiley face grocery bag still over her head.
Ugh.
And hears this man say to her, be careful about breathing too hard. And we can see this silhouette standing above her through the bag. And he says, I left enough holes for you to get air, but you will pass out if you start hyperventilating or screaming.
Oh.
So she's like, okay. And then she screams out for help.
Yeah. Okay. Help.
Yeah. He stomps over to her, leans down and places a knife against her neck, which makes her stop. And he says to her, Irina screamed. We had to hide in that closet while you were all looking around.
Oh, yeah.
For a moment, I was sure that you'd see me. Imagine how awkward that would have been.
I hate him.
He then removes the bag from over her head and smiles a little and says, hello.
Okay, hi, bitch.
Then they hear some footsteps and Francis's voice say, Julia?
Oh my God.
From their apartment through the wall.
Yeah.
So even though that knife is still against her throat, she starts to yell out for help.
Oh my gosh.
But then the spider quickly slides the blade across her throat, puncturing her jugular. There's blood, and she's now gasping for air, unable to call out anymore.
Okay. Usually, see, that never happens in those situations. Literally, like, never. If the knife's on the throat, the people stay quiet, and wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Would you still scream or would you
Absolutely
stay quiet?
Not. No way. Really? Not a chance. Not a chance. I just feel like I would be way too scared. Like, in that moment, he can kill me.
Mm-hmm.
He can kill me. I know that if I scream, the knife is there. And I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Ultimately, I wouldn't scream, but I'll tell you why. I would scream in this situation, because I think it's like, I would think I'm going to be dead anyways. So I might as well try while someone is nearby. And even if he cuts me, like maybe they'll at least hear me before that happens. And then I can get rushed to a hospital, whatever.
And you're probably right for that.
I don't know. I feel like more often than not, when people like warn you not to scream, it's more because they're scared, not because
that's true.
They're really going to do something. I mean, in this situation, I think I wouldn't because of that little interview that she read from that person who said that he just watched her and she ended up getting away. And so it's like, with that in the back of my mind, I'd be like, okay, maybe this is the type of guy where if I do comply, I might get out of this. So I think I wouldn't in the end for this one.
I feel like my brain wouldn't be able to go through all of that in that moment, but I think you're entirely right, especially because she's kind of like almost in a weird way built a relationship with this guy. So mm-hmm. I think feel like I could talk my way out of it somehow. If I could just like feed into whatever it is, like go along with whatever it is that he's asking and blah, blah, blah. And then maybe I could somehow get out of it. Although we've seen his face. So it's not like he's going to let us walk out the door either. But still.
It's hard when he's like making you look at this person who's been decapitated and basically saying, I'm the spider. Mm-hmm. Like that's hard to get out of for sure. We do have that information about like how he's like, I'm always taking care of my sick father. And maybe that's somewhere that you could like.
Exactly. We have a little bit of backstory on him.
Yeah. She holds her hand against the wound to try to stop the bleeding. And when she rolls over onto her stomach, we realize that we're in a bed, but unfortunately by rolling over, the stream of blood gets worse because like gravity.
Yeah, gravity. Yeah.
But she rolled over because she's trying to reach out to the wall behind the bed and knock on it because that's the wall that's shared with our apartment.
Okay, yeah.
But just before she can, the spider drags her down the bed by her ankles. And we cut to Francis walking around the apartment confused where Julia is. And he's taken aback a bit when he sees like a half-packed suitcase in their bedroom.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he's just like, fuck. That literally, that's all he says. He's like, it's weird because he's like, now I know she's leaving, but where is she right now?
Yeah, like he doesn't. Oof. Yeah, that's creepy.
Cut back to Julia. She's crawling on the floor next door trying to hold a hand against that neck wound. And he's just standing at the entrance to the bedroom, like enjoying watching her struggle.
Ugh, gross.
But she has her sights set on the coffee table, which she's probably about six, seven, 8 feet away from.
Okay.
And she gets closer and closer. But when she's 2 feet away, her body gives up and she lays still on the floor, eyes glazed over. So she was like trying to get to that drawer.
Oh my God, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The pistol. But she doesn't make it. Like her body slumps and gives up. And that is when the spider walks over, knife still in his hand, and leans down to look at her. And she's still making little breaths here and there. So she's not dead yet, but her body is slowly shutting down. He then lays next to her and they're both like kind of on their side.
Ew.
And he puts a hand over hers as if he's comforting her.
Disgusting.
And they're both just looking into each other's eyes, blinking. And the puddle of blood is growing pretty substantially underneath her neck. And he stands up, cleans his knife off on his sleeve, and then he goes very still because he senses something.
Ooh.
And he slowly lifts his head up to look out the nearby window, and he sees across the street that someone is looking out of their window back at him. And they've presumably seen all of this.
Yeah.
It's this little girl, probably around like 10 years old.
Oh, no.
He keeps his cool, and I'm assuming, based on the face that he pulls, internally, he's like, well, shit, I guess I'll be killing her now.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But he goes to the bathroom and washes his hands. He puts his brown coat back on. And then Julia's phone starts ringing. It's Francis, and Francis hears Julia's phone ringing through the wall.
Right.
So he steps out into the hallway, and Francis starts walking down the hall when Irina's door opens and the spider steps out. The spider looks right at him. Francis looks at the spider and he's like, shit. And when it dawns on him that this is the guy from across the street, like this is, it's real. This is him. And Francis is pissed. He starts walking toward him and is like, hey. But before he reaches him, the spider takes a gunshot to his back from inside the apartment.
Yes.
And Francis jumps back and is obviously shocked and scared.
Yeah, right? Look what the
offer. Yeah. And the spider clings to the opposite wall of the hallways and turns around, then takes another shot to the chest. He slides down the wall and collapses to the ground, and we cut to Julia standing in the apartment with the gun in her hands.
Standing?
Exactly. Covered in blood. I don't know how she isn't dead. It was so much blood.
I thought maybe, like, she was faking that, like, to, like, you know, be able to grab the gun, but, like, mm-hmm. the amount of blood and the where the cut is, I'm surprised that she mm-hmm. was able to stand.
Honestly, I am so down for, like, this to be a suspending my disbelief type of moment, because I'm just so happy that Frances is seeing all of this and she doesn't have to feel fucking crazy anymore.
Absolutely.
A nearby neighbor opens their apartment door and, like, gasps at what she sees, immediately running back inside, probably to call the police. Frances is still freaked out, like, taking in the image of this man dead on the floor in front of him. And then Julia steps out into the hallway and looks at Frances with this, like, I fucking told you so stare.
Told you so, bitch.
And that is when we cut to the credits.
No way. Oh God.
It's another, like, kind of, I mean, I don't want to call it mundane because there's nothing mundane about, like, a serial killer, like, decapitating women. The story that's being told is, like, mundane in one of those, like, realistic ways that feels a little bit like Speak No Evil to me, where it's like normal people in a normal situation with crazy things happening to them reacting in normal ways and, like, testing us, the audience, of, like, what we would do. And it's, I really loved that even though, like, Frances had some heated moments and said some stupid things, that he comes off as a very normal boyfriend.
Yeah.
Where it's like everybody, no matter how good of a relationship you have, how good of a guy he is, there's just something about believing women. Like, why is that an issue for everybody?
I know. Yeah.
So, because usually you see that theme, but it's like,
always toxic.
It's always in a toxic relationship. The guy's always just, like, an obvious asshole. And it's like, well, yeah, but, like, this really explored this way of thinking can happen in the healthiest of relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, I appreciated him for the most part. Mm-hmm. In comparison to what I'm used to in horror films. But, like, for him to have to actually see it all at the end unfold, like, that's satisfying as all hell.
Yeah. It's like, I was a little mad. I was like, I wanted to just go a little further because I need you to hear what you have to say right now.
Yeah. No, actually, that's such a good point. I would need to just get that confirmation from him. That's just like, oh, sorry for not believing you. Clearly, mm-hmm. I should have.
We at least, the looks on both of their faces, like, shows it all. But I would love to hear that conversation. So my survivability score, I went with a 44%.
Okay, so here's my thing right now. I'm stuck between the lowest of lows and the highest of highs, and the only reason I say that is because if I got to that point at the end
mm-hmm.
where my throat had been slashed, but if his back was turned and I had a gun, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm gonna survive that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, like, I'm like, do I count that? Because she did everything right through the movie. She really did. There's a lot of ways in which I feel like I thought I wasn't going to survive this because she did everything right. But I don't know. I don't know if I can allow that to slide, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he cuts my throat, but I'm able to grab the gun, I'm going to survive.
Yeah, for me, the reason I'm in the lower half is just because I think in a situation, this guy is like, he's done it before. He's a serial killer and he has chosen us. And no matter what right or wrong choices you make along the way, I feel like he's just so confident and experienced. And I feel like he'd have me in the palm of his hand, like mm-hmm. a serial killer who just decides I'm it. I don't think there's anything I could do to, like, outsmart them other than maybe, like, move in with my parents and be like,
yeah, right.
But, like, if I'm in a foreign city, like I said, that moment where I would literally try to, like, get escorted to the airport. I'm not even kidding. So, like, that might work if the police are good. And then I'd call my boyfriend and be like, I cannot be here anymore. I just saw this man and he has a human head in a bag. Like,
he has a head.
I'll see you in New York.
No, and see, like, that's why I do agree. I have to go lower because, like, everything, if I don't count that final moment, I do think I would have, like, I just think his actions in that final scene, I don't know if, or it's just because the final scene's so unrealistic. That's mm-hmm. why, like, that's why I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to cut out the unrealistic part and therefore go with, see, I want to go, like, 48.
Okay.
48.
I don't know. I'm such a paranoid person, and he feeds off of paranoia. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'd just be in the palm of his hand, and I'd think I was doing the right thing, but actually I'm just feeding into what he wants me to do. And
yeah,
I don't know what I'd do in that situation where I'm literally being attacked. I don't know if I'm trying to run or if I freeze or if I even like have, do you ever have those nightmares where you're trying to yell, but you can't?
Oh yeah, absolutely. All the time.
You're just so in shock and scared. Like, I feel like that could, I don't know. I have no idea.
Anytime I've had a nightmare, I freeze. And that's why I've always believed that that would be my reaction in real life too. I definitely wouldn't fight. I know that. And like, depends on the situation, but like maybe mm-hmm. I'd run, but more likely I would just freeze.
I think I would lean toward freezing as well, but yeah, it's hard. Like, this part is hard because it's like you don't know unless it's happened,
right? And I don't want to know, like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But I do think that the reason I'm in the bottom half of like the percent is because I think it's very likely that I would end up in that confrontational moment where it's like, he's going to try to kill me now. How mm-hmm. am I going to be able to survive this moment? I think it's very possible I wouldn't be able to get out of there before that moment came. And then it's just toss up.
I'm one of those super naive people too, who like watched 15 seasons of Criminal Minds yeah. and believes that they would be able to get away from the serial killer because they understand. No, like, girl, you would die. You would die.
Well, like I said, we do have a Discord, so get on there if you're not already. I'd Survive Podcast. Follow the Instagram, I'd Survive Podcast. And if you want your voice to be heard, we have a little form that you could submit to on Discord. And do let us know when it comes to Watcher 2022, would you survive?